Welcome to Merdeka Memories, a series about the challenges and opportunities faced by Singapore's Merdeka generation, men and women who were born in the 1950s and how their experiences have defined the Singapore spirit. I'm Chew Wee Lin, and in this episode, we hear from Lim Lee Kok. Born into a family of intellectuals who founded the Bedok Chong Wah Public School in 1946, she naturally assumed she would become an academic. However, her youthful idealism resulted in a spell in detention, which led her down a different path in life. Find out how she has managed to stay true to her ideals through her role as a publisher.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lim Lee Kok. I was born on 1954. I'm a publisher now. I publish books and comics. I grew up in East Coast. My old house is near today the new waterfront. Actually, want to go to my house, I have to go to a route called Koh Sek Lim Road, and that was a fishing village. My house is a school. Actually, my father is Lim Chu Kang. My father actually joined politics during the 53. He became the legislation member. I think he's more a nationalistic person. In his whole life, he thinks education is the most important. You know, people need to be educated. My father was the founder principal of this Chinese village school. It's called Bedok Chong Wah Public School. The Chinese is Wuluo Chong Wah Gong Li Xie Xiao. My father became ill at the end of the World War. I think because malnutrition and whatever. So after he recovered, and that time is after the war. So one day he went to Changi for swimming. And then he saw a big house, but nobody stayed. So he asked around, then they say this house had been haunted. That's why the owner gave up, you know, this place and moved to other part of the Katong. So he managed to find the owner. Their owner told him during the Japanese occupation, they use it as a center and they torture the prisoner. They use all kind of torture before they kill this prisoner. So they think it's haunted. Then my father said, since it's a place, I want to turn it into a school. So he get the blessing from the owner and he start planning for it. So he talked to a few of his classmates. So they go to clean up the space, and so he go around to get the village school children to study. My mother was the English teacher there. My auntie was the teacher there also. I think my parents, my auntie, they all are very idealistic people. They are sad that the war have deprived the kids the opportunity to educate. So they, after the World War, they just rushed to start the school, just hope to catch up of the time lost. So all the students are in the class. And growing up, my childhood is very interesting. My house is a school and it's like a big family. When I'm 2-3 years old, I will sit in the class already together with the other children. So like, can you imagine, you know, a classroom and there are few primary one until six, you know, all in the one class. So I'm sitting down there also and I will just listen, and the teacher will go around to coach the different class of students. That's in the 50s, only until 60 then when the population have grown. So then we have specific class, you know, for like primary one classes. And although I grew up in the village school, but I didn't study there. I went to another school that my second auntie was the principal. That is St. Teresa Sino Chinese School. It's a De Lan Gong Li Xie Xiao. My second auntie, Lin Zixuan, was the one who influenced me the most. She educated during the 30s, yeah, so she's almost the first few batch of the women or girls able to receive education in China. And later she studied in Shanghai also before the World War, Shanghai, the Art Academy. She actually passed away very young at the age of 59. During that period, you know, she are trying to build the secondary school for St. Teresa Primary School. So she worked very hard. And I never see somebody like her even today is so dedicated to education, to whatever work she have done. She made her life so simple. After she passed away, we can only find 6 cheong sam that she made herself. And she had 2 pair of leather shoes, black color, and that's it. And whatever other thing is her painting material. Today, why I still persist in whatever I'm doing, so much is influenced by my auntie. So like I went to university in the year of 72. In my university, I went to SU. SU is a University of Singapore, but after 70s, 76, they actually merged with Nanta and called NUS. Because I come from a quite educated family, and I quite good in study also. So actually, I always thought that I'm going to be a scholar. I probably get my PhD before my 30s, and I'm teaching also. But something happened and it affected my life. During the university day, then I get involved in some student activism and I become quite radical. So during my 3rd year, I participate in the student activities, and that probably the turning point in my life. You know, I left the university without a degree, so I have to do something. And then 76, I opened the bookshop because I love books. So I thought that's the best way, you know, that I can retain my interest and get a job. And we sell textbook stationery, but we also have a section of journal reading. So actually, textbook and assessment is seasonal. Textbook you only sell like end of the year, but after the beginning of the term, people will start buying assessment or journal reading. So we have both.
But you were still able to make a profit?
I think we distribute leaflet, let's say 20,000 to all the household in Queenstown area at that time, you know. And then we offer 10%, which I didn't know is not allowed in the textbook. Because textbook, the margin is very small. But I give 10%, so we have a lot of customers come to us.
So I read in an interview that when you were young, you actually moved out of your family home. Is that right?
As the bookshop at that time is at Queensway Shopping Centre. So I tried to stay around the area and to get the cheaper rental. I stay in like Redhill, Bukit Ho Swee, Queenstown, Tanglin Hall. And my house is actually at Aukang, quite near today the Sengkang, so it's quite a distance. I didn't really officially break up, like, no, I still visit the family during the weekend. Yeah, so I moved out from the protection from the home and I get to know the lower income community. And that's quite an impact to me.
How did it influence you? Or what kind of impact did it have on you?
I really see the urban poor, how they live, you know. And actually, my father, he went to do business and he became quite wealthy, you know, and we stay in a big bungalow house. But when I see the poor, I just feel the world need to be more even, you know. The wealth need to be better distributed. You know? So I stay in a one-room flat in Bukit Ho Swee. You know, last time, we stay in the rural side, the house usually quite big, although we don't have water, but we have a space, you see. But in an urban area, you can see the room is very small. But still, I'm very impressed with many people there. You know, I see the people working very hard to improve their life. You know, the old lady, they will boil the porridge in the morning. And they start about 6. You know, they will just carry the pot and sell to the people who go to work, you know, until like 8 o'clock.
Did that make you want to do something for them, or did you help them in any way?
Actually, the turning point, I think more, is in the university. That is the come contact with the, you know, the squatter in Malaysia, the worker in Jurong, and some of the friends, so they are students then being arrested, being detained. And that is quite a shock to me, that I really think the society cannot carry on this way and we must do something. Because I'm I think I'm a socialist. I believe in a more equal society. Will be good for mankind. And during 1987, I was detained together with others under a so-called Marxist conspiracy. So I skipped the details, just that after all the questioning, so later part of the detention, I was given opportunity to read, and I kind of excited by some of the new material that I'm reading. Actually, the detention is a very difficult times of my life. It's not that I'm being tortured or what, it's just that person like us, we have grown up to want to make this society a better one, you know, with my elders, my parents, my auntie, you know, they're all quite idealist people. And later I thought a socialist can be a solution. But what happened in the reality, there are certain things that the cultural revolution in China, what happened in Soviet Union, and most of all the Pol Pot regime in Cambodia have really shocked me, that this path, you know, have a lot of problem, you know. So it's really a very confusing period, you know. I think to many people who will believe in socialist, it's heartbroken. We see the ideal society, you know, is broken down. So I think the world should be more equal and the wealth should be more evenly shared, and the unfortunate people need more help. That's why actually my publishing work now, I just want to encourage, actually I think the key point, you know, is actually love. We need to love the world more, love the people more, and if there are more help, more sharing to each other, the better world will come. So during a detention is just like kind of awful, you know, that people accuse you being a Marxist, and yet we have a lot of question, or I have a lot of question myself about the things I have believed. And so kind of detention have served a purpose, that I'm in solitary and I'm able to have time to read, you know. And I reread a lot of literature that I have, and I think some of the classics have really impacted me, because we're only allowed to read things that are not political. We read history, we read, you know, literature. So the thing I read from the Chinese history and literature, I think there are some spirit in the Chinese culture. It's just so strong that I think it console whoever being troubled. You look at the long stretch of history, there are so much suffering, and people go through it, and people overcome it, and, you know. So I kind of find a new spirit, you know, after the detention, and I come back, I want to, you know, after release, I just want to do something. And a particular, there's one comic artist in Taiwan called Cai Zizhong. He have drawn comics about the saying of Confucius and all the classic. And I find the work are very interesting, and I thought maybe we can re-look at our tradition, our culture, and find a new solution for our problem. I have started Asia Pack on 1983, and I closed down the bookshop in 87. Actually, the bookshop closed down during my detention, but it's really a coincidence. It's really not the authority asked me to close down. I feel strongly when I selling books that the cultural traffic were just very uneven. We are buying a lot of books from the West, and there's very little content about Asia, and I'm proud of our own Asian heritage and our culture. And I also think the literature is needed. So we try, and I think there's a demand. It's after years of selling textbook and assessment and general reading from other country, I really feel the need to have our own publication. So the urge of publish our own book become stronger. So in 83, no, I think we started 82, we have started this Asia Pack and experiment some book. And so publishing, actually I'm not trained, I don't have proper knowledge about publishing. So I have to take a long time to learn. But at the same time, we start to import books, so I become a distributor. So as a distributor, it actually helped me to have the network of the selling.
Did you face any challenges as a woman publisher?
I really don't feel any discrimination, and they're very afraid of me. Actually, they always say I cannot own Lee-Kok money. So very few people cheat me, actually, because after my detention, you know, I have a different status. They say I've already been victimized, so they cannot victimize me. So they cannot own me money.
So since then, what kind of challenges do you face in the publishing scene? I mean, nowadays people don't seem to even read. They're just looking at their phone all the time. Are you impacted by this?
I think the world has changed a lot since the 80s. The new media did create some impact. But I think content is still the ultimate thing. You know, people are looking at new content. It's just that there are new way of package the content. And actually, I'm very optimistic. I'm not thinking as a publisher. I'm just thinking of how fortunate our generation now that we access to so many channels, and many of them are free. Many things you can find in Google, and they are free of charge. And as an individual, as a person who want to write something, this is the best time also. You can set up your blog, you can have a Facebook, you can share with your friends or many strangers. This is a era that you cannot say nobody want to publish my book, because you have the means and it's free for you to express yourself and to share with others. Then what can this age, no? What can the publisher do in this kind of situation? I'll just say, we provide the professionalism, we provide the network, we provide the know-how, so that each individual can market themselves. But publisher can put everyone together. We can go to a bigger platform in the global market, like we go to Frankfurt Book Fair, we went to London Book Fair, we go to Beijing Book Fair to promote. But as an individual, although you can release your work, but it might not be cost-effective for you to travel to so many places, but a publisher can. So I'm totally optimistic about the situation now, and I think a new world will come, you know, where everybody have the channel to express themselves. You know, it's very exciting.